Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. Today is Sunday, September 12th. Yesterday was the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 tragedy here in the U.S., and it was a sad but kind of beautiful day of remembrance here and around the world. And it was kind of bittersweet because it's such a tragic day in American history, yet to see people kind of just remembering and being very respectful and thoughtful about it was a beautiful thing to see. My creative tonight is Monica Zanetti. She is the writer and director of one of the sweetest rom-coms I've seen in a long time. It's called Ellie and Abby. It's available on Amazon Prime. You can buy it or rent it. And I really recommend it. It's family friendly. My son and I watched it and we really enjoyed it. So grab a cup of coffee or your favorite beverage. Cuddle up with your loved ones. Tell them how much you love them every day. Cuddle up with me too. And enjoy the show. Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good.
I'm just taking a little photo of your background because that's really cool.
Yeah. Thank you so much for meeting me.
Great. No, I'm very happy to meet with you. I'm good. I'm in a lockdown at the moment. So this is a lovely thing to do.
You guys just had a recent outbreak, right?
Yeah. We're finally getting our second wave. It has come when everyone else is like, you know, having a great time and getting back into the world. And we're
the movie is so sweet. And it's so funny. I was cracking up, not spoiler alerts. I mean, if you watch the trailer, you know what the concept of the film is. But towards the end, towards the climax, and a little when Ellie's aunt runs to go when she goes to run to check and she's like breathing heavy. I was like, what? Because it was just such a cute addition, because it's like she's a ghost. No spoiler.
It's a big spoiler, but it is, like you said, it's very much in the title that the aunt is a ghost. That was some great improvising by Julia Billington, actually, who played the character. Like, she was doing the puffing like in one take, and then when we cut, I was like, you can't puff, you're a ghost, you're fine. And then the next take she did it, but she added that little bit at the end, which was just like a lovely little button.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I like about it is it's family friendly. I mean, there's some cursing and maybe a tad bit of adult content, but not so much that you couldn't let, you know, your older child or your teenager watch, which was nice, because a lot of the films that I watch, I have to say, no, you know, you can't watch it.
Yeah, you know? That was a part of why I wanted to make it, basically, right? That I wanted a queer film that I could watch with my mom, that I think, you know, is really missing when you grow up. Like, we're starting to have really such wonderful queer content out there now, but, you know, the stuff that's out there for families, like, to watch together, you know, it's very lacking. And that's what, you know, I really wanted this film to be, something that you could go to a cinema and watch it with your family and not have to feel uncomfortable or weird, or, you know, because there's a massive sex scene in the middle of it that you're like, right, oh God, I'm watching this with my dad.
Exactly. So you felt a need for a type of family-friendly film that addresses the issues, but where did the idea of the aunt come into it?
A couple of places. You know, I'm very aware that I'm someone that, you know, had quite a lucky upbringing, a lucky queer upbringing. And a lot of that is because my uncle was gay. So he came out in the 60s. You know, he had been with his partner, Gary, for a very long time before Gary passed away with HIV. And so, you know, there was a sense of it having kind of been normalized in my family, where for a lot of other people's families, it hadn't been. And, you know, and that's something that I know that I was very lucky for. You know, he came out to his conservative parents, which became my conservative grandparents. You know, he also came out to his brothers and sisters, which became my mom and my, you know, uncles and aunties. And so there, you know, to some extent, there was already a safe space for me. It definitely was still hard. Like, don't get me wrong. It definitely had its moments. And I definitely had all my, you know, internalized homophobia from high school to battle through first. But that was kind of the idea, is that, you know, we had two very different experiences, and his was much harder than mine, and mine was easier because he had come before me. And so I wanted to kind of write something, you know, when I wanted to write this fun rom-com for, you know, young people of today, I realized pretty quickly, like, I couldn't tell that story without telling the story of, like, why they can have a fun rom-com for the people of today. Like, this can only exist because of the people that came first. And right. So that was kind of at the essence of that character of Aunt Tara.
Right. Absolutely. And so many young people in the community will say, if not for the ones that came before them, they would not. I mean, it's still hard. It's incredibly hard. Still homophobia, there's still transphobia, there's still just horrible people.
Yeah.
But right, compared to 30, 40, 50 years ago, forget about it.
Yeah, I talked 20 years ago, you know, 10 years ago. It's, we've come, like, we have come so far, and it's quite incredible to look back on, you know, while still facing the challenges that are very much still there.
Absolutely. I mean, what was it, the 80s? They called HIV or AIDS, they called it the gay cancer. I mean, come on. They didn't even have a name for it. They would refuse to do operations because they were afraid they were going to catch the gay cancer. It's just, now, God, we're in the 20s, but 40 years ago. It's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, in Australia where I live, homophobia was still illegal in one of our states until like 1994 or something. And we only legalized marriage equality in 2018. So like, you know, it's felt, when I was writing this film, we didn't have marriage equality at the time. So it was very, you know, it's so funny how, where it was, where I was when it started and where, you know, where we are now, you know, it's a small, it kind of feels like this massive shift that has happened in this such a small amount of time, particularly in Australia.
Right. And it seems like for Ellie coming out and I don't even know if it's coming out, but acknowledging her feelings, it seemed okay in the film, you know, if that makes sense. It seemed okay that she was just like, yeah, I have feelings for this girl. It seemed okay. Yeah. And when you were writing it, was that kind of you projecting your desires to see that change to where it was okay and not as big a deal as people make it out to be?
Yeah, I was very aware that I didn't want her coming out to be at the center of the drama of the story, because there's already those films, they already exist. And, you know, in an earlier edition of the film, she never actually, in like one of the first versions of the script, she never actually came out. Like, she never actually said the words to anyone. She just, when we met her, she was already out. It had just happened. You know, and we ended up putting it in there because of, you know, distributor notes, audience notes, network notes, you know, people saying that they felt that they really wanted to see that moment. And, you know, it is what triggers Tara, you know, to show up, and they really needed help making that connection. So I ended up putting it back in. But yeah, for the longest time, I tried to not have it in there because I just wanted, you know, us to find her and, you know, to be so at peace with it. But, you know, she is at peace with it in the film, which is what's really lovely. And so I guess, yeah, I wanted to be able to find the drama in the conflict in the story to come from the horrible feeling of liking someone and not knowing if they like you back, rather than, you know, coming out to people. And so, so it definitely was a very important part of what I was trying to do.
Right. It takes the focus off of, you know, coming out of the closet and puts it more on the story is more about having a crush or having a first love, that unrequited love, you know, the nervousness of asking someone to prom or to the formal. Every teenager's worst nightmare of that nervousness, you know, that I like this person. Oh my God, what if they don't like me? Without even having to bring the sexuality or orientation into it.
Yeah.
I understand
as a plot point. Okay. You might have people going, wait a minute, why is she asking a girl out? Okay. Well, let me break it down. You know, this is why.
let me spell it out for you.
Right. Because without it, it's more a case of Aunt Tara showing up kind of as a, no pun intended, but fairy godmother for, yep, in a Cinderella way, if that makes sense, or like a little love advisor.
Yeah, no, definitely the Cinderella element was definitely something that was there. And, you know, the wonderful, I guess, like, it's the other love story at the center of this is, you know, Ellie and her aunt, who she never got mm-hmm. to meet because she died before she was born, coming back as this fairy godmother, you know, in a very clumsy way and in a way mm-hmm. that Ellie doesn't want. And, you know, she has a lot of fear for Ellie because of what she had been through. And she's got no idea, like, about teenagers of today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what they need. And so, you know, getting Ellie to a place where she can, while, you know, at first she finds her aunt to be like interfering and kind of ruining everything, you know, Ellie's best laid plans have now kind of been bulldozed by her aunt, who thinks she's got a better idea of what Ellie should be doing. And, you know, getting to the point of Ellie, you know, coming around to, you know, find this love for her aunt. And I think that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's the other really important love story at the center of it.
Right. Well, honestly, sometimes with teenagers, they think adults are morons anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, how could you possibly understand what I'm going through? How, this is a stupid idea. This will never work. But to be fair, Ellie takes a lot of her guidance from inspirational quotes and things that she's read anyway. So why not mm-hmm. take somebody else's advice?
That's exactly right. You know, just because it's not on the internet doesn't mean it's not okay.
It doesn't have to hang on a wall to be, you know, valid advice. I found it funny. And then I came to like a gradual realization as to why, when Ellie came to her mom and told her, you know, how she was and how she was feeling, and her mom just reacted so badly. I was like, pardon my French, but I was like, what a bitch. That's your daughter. But then it came to me, and this might just be my interpretation of it, that she was scared to see her daughter go through what she saw her sister go through. And then knowing what happened, not to say anything, watch the movie, but knowing it made even more sense to me because I thought she was just, you know, a bigot or a homophobe. And then it's so beautifully explained too, without telling you, if that makes sense. It's like the film didn't tell me. I just figured my own, which was kind of cool, kind of sweet.
That's cool. And I think that was kind of what I really wanted to say for Erica, the mother character. You know, her reaction is coming from a place of fear. She has seen, you know, she grew up with a gay sister, and, you know, again, her experience is very much marked by that experience. And I think Erica still is the kind of character who always has thought, like, I'd be fine with that. Like, of course, you know, gay rights for everyone, very progressive. Mm-hmm. And then when it's her daughter, she's confronted with the fact that she's still terrified of that. And, you know, and she doesn't, I think a lot of her frustration at Ellie comes from the fact that she's frustrated at herself for having that reaction. Like, she just thought, like, I'll just be cool. Like, I'd just be a cool mom about that kind of stuff. And then, you know, realizes that she's got this deep down fear, like, triggered from her past. And and her, you know, and I think her attempts to get on board and be cool with it also just add to the, like, the wonderful humor of, you know, and then also Ellie's making her angry because Ellie's like talking down to her about how she's bigger and all these things that she definitely doesn't think she is. And so she's also kind of angry at Ellie for doing that. And so in that way, she won't connect with her daughter because they're also fighting because, like, how dare Ellie yell at her when she's done all these things, you know, she's raised her herself. And, you know, just great mother-daughter tension that just can come from many different layered places that gets in the way of them being able to just talk to each other. And I think Marta Dusseldorf, who plays Erica, is just does such a wonderful job with that. She's such a great actress.
Well, and plus you have mom basically saying, you don't understand, like, how to say it, because Ellie doesn't know the truth of what happened to her aunt. She doesn't know, but it's kind of like mom, Erica, upset with her for not understanding something that she never knew. If kind of like, you just need to trust me on this. Well, teenagers never trust parents on anything. It's like, no, I need to make my own decisions. I need to figure this out on my own. But she doesn't have the information. She doesn't have the whole story. She thinks that it was just, you know, a tragic thing. Mm. And if she actually knew, she'd be like, oh, cool. I totally understand where my mom's coming from. And making that, you know, a point in the story that she doesn't know. So there's that misunderstanding and that tension. It just builds up very nicely. And the resolution was just like adorable.
Mm.
A total like a Pretty in Pink feel towards the end. I really like that.
Oh, that's good. Yes. The ending was definitely like homage to all great rom-com endings. I think, mm-hmm. you know, all the films that I watched growing up that had like that ending, you know, the heteronormative rom-coms that I watched growing up that had that ending that I always kind of wanted to see in a queer film that, you know, had less one of the main characters dying or one of the main characters, you know, telling, you know, outing the other one and humiliating them and then, you know, riding off into the sun with the boyfriend that they already had. Like, I wanted the fun, happy ending. And so that was very much an important part of, you know, this wasn't a prom film where either of them were going to go to prom and get humiliated. That was never going to happen. And, you know, I'm very happy to say that up front. You know, I want people to know that going in, because sometimes I think there can be an anxiety about watching a film like this as a queer kid, being like, oh God, when are we going to get to the scene where, you know, they get rejected publicly at prom? And like, this is not. So I want, you know, I wanted that ending very much.
Right. No Carrie ending with the bucket of blood.
No Carrie ending. There's no buckets of blood in this film at all.
So, but it was sweet, and it was a nice departure, because you kind of expect that whole cliche, maybe hand in hand, walk in, everybody's like, hey, cool, you know, and it wasn't. They just had that quiet moment. Mm. And I thought that made it even like more special, more intimate for them. Mm. I thought that was super sweet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, it's nice to have time out from your prom. It's nice to have your nice moment away, you know, away from prying eyes. And, you know, I like to think that afterwards they went back in there and danced with everyone, but, you know, now they just had that time together.
To me also, it was kind of like they didn't have anything to prove to the classmates.
Yeah, like absolutely.
There was no need to pop in and be like, we're here and we're queer, because it was about them. It was about their connection.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the most important thing. Like, it was the acceptance with each other and the acknowledgement between each other. Yeah, and not about the acceptance of the peers.
Exactly. Which kind of should mirror in real life, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's nice to think that we might get to a stage where that is the real situation, is that, you know, I think everyone is like, how good would it be to get to a point where we don't have to label ourselves and we don't have to, you know, no one has to come out. And I, you know, absolutely, there's things in that that I'm like, that would be a really wonderful place to get there when we get there. I know for a lot of people, like, labeling kind of saves their life, and or labeling, you know, gives them something grounded, or coming out, you know, helps them just really confirm for themselves who they are. And so I think in that way, it's still important. But yeah, to get to a stage where, you know, that is completely optional, something you can opt in or opt out of, I think would be really lovely.
Right. I mean, to take away, at least for film titles or book titles, does it need to say, you know, romance? No. It should say it's a romance or it's a horror film. Yeah. To be able to like go in without any expectations and just enjoy a film, that would be amazing.
That would be amazing. I agree.
Maybe in another 20 years.
Maybe in another 20 years. I don't know. I think the youth of today are pretty incredible. I think they're doing some pretty incredible things. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're the ones to change this too.
Right. Definitely very forward moving, very progressive, very pushy in a good way.
Yeah, and, absolutely. You
know, pushing for the equality. And it is, I feel like it is a bit more normalized now, which is nice. Mm. It's not, I don't think, how to say it, I'm not trying to be, but like, it's not shocking. Like,
yeah,
Does that make sense? Like if my brother came to me and said, I'm gay, it wouldn't be like, what's that? I've never heard of such a thing. How dare you? No, it'd be like, oh, okay.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
What's your next step? How are you, you know? I think it's becoming easier, and I think it's just going to continue to become easier. We're always going to have stupid people. Always.
Yes. No, unfortunately that's true. And you know, and it also is also very representative of, like, you know, where we get to live in the world, you know, in that certain cultures. And there's definitely other places in the world where, you know, it's a very different experience. And
absolutely. In some places it's a death.
Yes.
I spoke to a gentleman and he said when he was a teenager, you were either straight or you were dead meat.
Yeah. So incredibly hard.
Yeah. It's funny that you said, I always thought for some reason that Australia was a little more progressive with its acceptance, but no, 2018
was when we had marriage equality. Yeah. It's a real misconception about Australia that we're very progressive. Like, yes, obviously we have our pockets, but where marriage equality was something that we were incredibly slow on. You know, it's becoming more apparent now, like our climate policy is one of the worst in the world. And, it's hard to know where it is and what it stems from. We've had a conservative government in power for almost 10 years now. Like, it's a little concerning. And, like I said, like, there is this incredible younger generation that I see coming up that I'm like, this is great. You're really gonna change this. And definitely a shift of people kind of looking around our country and being like, look how lucky we are to live here. You know, we're starting to come to terms with our history of, you know, of genocide in this country. And that's kind of what this country was built on, you know, but those conversations are still so slow moving here. And I don't know if it's because we're all just, you know, I think that laid back thing is definitely a very real thing that's here, like that perception that we're all quite laid back. We're laid back in certain ways, but it doesn't always lead to being laid back about things that are important that we shouldn't be laid back about, that we should be pushing for. We're a funny little confused country, Australia.
With 1,000 deadly things that'll kill you with a bite.
Well, that was the thing. During the pandemic, everyone was like, wow, you're also compliant in your lockdowns, and when we were doing it right, like when we were, you know, the envy of the world of how we had dealt with the virus. And my unofficial theory was that it was because we have so many things here that'll kill you, like that we are used to complying with rules to stay alive. Like if there's a sign being like, you can't go in the beach today, we're like, okay, cool, I won't go in the beach today. Or if they're like, you can't swim there, there's a crocodile, we're like, great, I won't swim there, there's a crocodile. So when they're like, you know, there's a virus, stay inside, we're like, cool, virus, we'll stay inside. Like we're very compliant in a lot of ways. And I think that's how we escaped the virus.
Right. You have that healthy fear of death that keeps you safe.
We do. A very healthy fear of death.
Oh, crazy. And you guys did. You nipped it right in the bud, and everybody was like, damn. And then, so what'd you got the pesky little variant down there giving you?
We got the variant. We got the Delta, the big D, the thing that no one can defeat. So now we're really trying to catch up.
Right. Not to get all off on a COVID tangent, but how are you guys with vaccinations?
We're getting better. We were very slow, again, very laid back about the vaccine rollout. Our Prime Minister literally said when we started vaccinating people, it's not a race. Like that was his exact words. And then because we were COVID free, everyone was being chill. And then the Delta got in and it broke out very badly. And then all of a sudden it became very clear that it was in fact a race. And right. So now we're amping it back up. You know, we're getting close to some good rates, and I think they're expecting by like October, you know, October, November is when we will be coming out of this current lockdown, because that's kind of the thing. They're like, you just need to stay in this lockdown until enough of you are vaccinated that we can come out again. That no more of this trying to quash the numbers. They're just, you know, basically holding the fort until we get there. So that's where we're at currently.
What does your lockdown entail? Are you allotted like a couple hours a week to go to the store, things like that?
Yeah. So generally you're allowed to go outside depending on where you live. In Sydney, there's more, you know, lockdowns that are in harsher in areas. And in those areas, you're only allowed to go outside for an hour a day for exercise. And I think one person from your house is allowed to go to the store for groceries. And then in my area, which is a bit more lucky, you're allowed outside for exercise for as long as you want to be outside, because, you know, transmission outside is very unlikely. Masks, although you've got to wear a mask, and you can go to, same thing, only one person can go to the shop like once a day to get things. So that's kind of what it entails. But I'm very lucky enough to be, I'm on a job at the moment which has an exemption, whether or not, because we're in the middle of a production boom in Australia, because everyone was bringing their productions here because we were so safe, and now they're kind of stuck here being like, all right, well, we've just got to keep filming. So I go into Fox Studios every day to do my job, which is which I feel very lucky about, and we're incredibly safe at that, you know, that office job. And so I feel like I'm currently, I've done eight weeks or 10 weeks of this lockdown, and now I get to go to an office job, which I am very, very grateful for, because yeah, it means I can ride out the last bit of it with a bit of normalcy.
Right. But now you have to put real clothes on.
I'm putting on jeans again. I'm just like, what are these?
How do these work? I can't, do I put both legs?
yeah, exactly.
So Fox Studios, are you working on a film or?
No, I'm working on the TV adaptation that it's all announced, so I can talk about it. The Lost Flowers of Alice Hart, which is a book, and it's an Amazon production starring Sigourney Weaver. So I'm working as like a learning how to be a script editor, which on this show as a little baby script editor. So that's something new and exciting, and I'm very much enjoying it.
Right. But you've got an amazing film under your belt already. That's a nice, nice. Yeah.
Yes. No, I'm building up all the skills.
Absolutely. To take over the world.
That's my plan. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what is next for Ellie and Abby? I mean, it can be seen on Amazon, right?
Yes. It can be seen on Amazon. You can rent it or buy it on iTunes or Google Play. I am not sure where it's going to next. How exciting. Obviously it'll end up on some streamer eventually, but for now that's where you can watch it. And who knows what's next? Hopefully, you know, maybe we're not done with this world, and hopefully we can develop it into something else, maybe a new generation.
Right. Like a father of the bride kind, well, not father, but mother of Bride, mother of the bride too, kind of thing.
That would be wonderful. I did pitch my gay father of the bride idea to Disney, but it's already well into readaptation. So I was like, damn it, just missed out.
Close. Now, did you get to have a theatrical release with the film, or did everything kind of just lock?
We did. Yeah. So when we first premiered at the Mardi Gras Film Festival in Sydney in February of 2020, and, you know, one of the big things that I kind of, you know, had said earlier about this film was like wanting an LGBT rom-com that I could like watch in a cinema with my mum and my family instead of, you know, in my room by myself. And right. That was, you know, we were the opening night of the Mardi Gras Film Festival, and we opened in a cinema that sat 700 people, and one of which was my mum. And being able to actually have that moment of watching that film in a packed cinema, you know, it's something I don't think I will ever forget that moment. Like, it was so special and just really exciting. And then obviously everything shut down, and the rest of the film festivals we did were all online for the rest of the year. But we did get to have a local cinema release in Australia at the end of the year when we opened back up, which was really lovely. And I got to travel around to different states and meet lots of people and do lots of audience Q&As and all that kind of stuff, which was really special. And now we're, you know, on our you know, I would have loved to have been in America for our premiere. You know, that was always part of the plan, but fortunately I've just got to wait a bit longer. But it's very exciting to have it out there on digital, because, you know, you can just reach so many people on digital. It's really incredible.
Right.
Absolutely. The arts, you know, we've got a lot to thank the arts for. Mm. I'm hoping that we all realize how important and how vital the arts have been to helping everyone get through this. So, you know, hopefully when, you know, we do have that sense of normalcy again, and I know you're all starting to experience that we do go out to movie theaters and we do go out and support, you know, the people that brought us so much joy in this time. You know, we buy the tickets and we, you know, we give the good reviews or the good ratings or whatever it is that's going to help them get up that next thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that that's what I very much need.
Right. I hope you don't forget how good it was, you know, like you said, the arts were to us. Like when everything's, you know, fingers crossed, God willing, Buddha, whoever, when we either get this under control or there's so many of us vaccinated that it's not restricting us. I hope we don't forget. I hope we don't, you know, I hope we go to our movie theaters. I hope we go to concerts and comedy shows, because all of these people, all the creators and the creatives, and they've still been creating and they've still been producing it and providing it to us in a way. They were there for us. And also what I have found so wonderful and so refreshing is I feel like filmmakers who may have not had the opportunity with everything open and booming have really flourished with the availability of making something for 20K and uploading it to Amazon Prime. It's just been a real boon for them. And it's so wonderful. Yeah. I've seen the best movies and they're all like, oh, it only cost us $10,000. What? You know?
Yeah. We can only make this with one cameraman because like COVID safe, it was the only way you could do it. And you start to be like, oh wow, you can make things with a crew of, you know, of two people if you need to, someone to do the camera, someone to do the sound, you know, Everyone does the lights. Everyone at some point holds something.
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
Well, that's amazing. And I'm glad to hear that it's doing so well. And I hope that, I hope you get out of quarantine soon. But
yes,
I'm excited. So it was The Lost Flowers of
Alice Hart. It's a book by an author called Holly Ringland. I can show you. You'll see it. This is actually the book. This is it right here. It's a beautiful book. Very much a beautiful book. But it will be coming to Amazon next year, I'd say, or the year after, however time works these days.
That's super cool. I'm so excited. I was going to ask you were talking about watching the film with your mom in the theater for your release. How long ago was it that you came out to her or to your family?
It would have been, I was a bit of a late bloomer, so early 20s. So what, 23, I think I was, which, you know, is over 10 years ago now. So it's been, I've been around for a while.
Asked because as a mom, knowing my daughter, was queer and had made this film kind of as an extension of your heart. Mm. I wondered if she thought, oh gosh, is this what it was like for you?
She definitely, like, it was the whole thing was very emotional for my family. I think too, having, you know, at the end, I do a little dedication to my uncles and, you know, I know that has been, it's very emotional for all of them, for all of us. And I think, you know, I hope, you know, and that experience that Ellie has with her mum, you know, it is different to the experience I had with my mum. And I think that, you know, a lot of her anxiety came from, you know, was that me? Did I do that? Which I'm very happy to tell her, you know, you didn't, that wasn't you. And I think just overall, she's just very proud. She's just very, very happy that the film is doing so well. You know, we had this, you know, year of trips planned that they were going to come to our, you know, the New Zealand Film Festival and all these places that we were going that they, you know, Melbourne International Film Festival, we're all going to, you know, go and have a great family trip, that these things that we didn't get to do. But yeah, no, she's very proud. And I think it made her very happy. I think also being able to go to the DVD store and buy it on DVD, because my mum is still a DVD person, not so much the streamer. I think that was a very cool moment for her.
Right. I can just imagine. She's like, my daughter made this. My daughter. Yeah. And it's so funny that she would be like, is the mother based off of me?
Oh, absolutely. That's her greatest fear, is that I'm just sitting in my room writing things about my parents.
Well, maybe. But that's awesome. I'm excited to see it go on the big screen, because I know it will. I mean, it has to be seen on the screen, and it's going to do very well. I almost feel like, even though it's geared towards the younger set, I think it encompasses a broader demographic, you know?
Absolutely.
And again, yeah. family friendly. There's not sex, you know, there's not violence, you know, curse words. But
other than just curse words, that's the other very Australian part of it. We love to curse. One UK review that we got in the UK, she was very upset at the swearing. She just couldn't understand why I would ruin what could have been a sweet film for teenagers with swearing, which I did think was hilarious, because I was like, I think you'll find teenagers do swear. I think you'll find they don't mind it. It's you know, some of us that are a bit older that find the swearing a bit jarring. But and in Australia, a lot of it was cut out of the swearing. So I'm actually quite surprised that the swearing has been left in around the world. I'm like, oh, wow, you guys are much more bold than we were.
Well, honestly, I'm surprised it was from the UK, because they've got potty mouths themselves. Come on.
Everyone does. We all love a bit of swearing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just not that woman. That woman didn't. Look, that's fine. Good for her.
What do you call that? She was an aberration, because I've watched BBC and I heard them say shit and I was like, you can say that on your TV?
Yeah. No, it's so funny. It's so funny. But yes, other than that, it is very family friendly.
Yeah. Please. My kids heard it. Yeah. It's been amazing talking to you. I'm so glad that we got to do this.
Oh, me too. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. And enjoy your freedom. Are you going to work on Monday?
I'm going to work on Monday, tomorrow. I will. You walk through the gates of Fox Studios and it's like a whole different world. Everyone there doing their jobs, getting their regular tests, all vaccinated, making shows, coffee shops open. It's wonderful.
wearing button-up shirts and real
wearing button-up shirts, you know, everything. It's great.
It's going to be like another planet for you, probably.
It is. It's the future.
This is vaguely familiar. I remember this. I think I saw it.
That's what it's like.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations on all your success. It's an amazing film. And it's been a real honor speaking with you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been great being here.
Thank you, Monica. Have fun at work tomorrow.
I will. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Monica. Again, you can check out Ellie and Abby on Amazon Prime. Please head over to beunique.org and support, follow, and love my beautiful humans there. You can find me on social media. I'm Pup Duffy on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also follow and like the show on Facebook. It's Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. As always, take care of each other, love each other, watch each other's backs, and I'll see you next time.